It's the 25th of May, 2024, and I've just returned from 12 days in England. It's my first time in England or anywhere in Europe, for that matter, and I really appreciated the opportunity to be able to go and be there with the Sangha, and Longpa Pasano was there for that as well. He came back earlier than me, so we each went on separate trips for Longpa Sumedho's 90th birthday party. So although his actual 90th birthday is in July 27th, that's during the beginning of the Vasa period, so it's not so convenient to have a large gathering at Amaravati that time. So had it rolled it into the Visakha Puja celebrations, the Buddha's birthday, traditionally on the full moon of May. So this year it fell on May 22nd. We celebrate the birth, the enlightenment, and the passing away of the Buddha. That it's said that those all happened on the full moon of May. So going to a very large gathering, and I heard this was Amaravati's biggest gathering ever. And I guess my perception of Amaravati is that they just always have big gatherings like this. But actually, that's not the case. They don't have gatherings this big. So Longpa Pasano, being 50 Vasas, he was number 11 in the lineup in seniority as to all the bhikkhus who were there. So as it was, May 18th was the day before the main celebration, the Saturday, and then May 19th was the main celebration, Sunday. So on the Saturday, there was about 120 bhikkhus, and then on the Sunday, there was about 150, and there was a large field at the monastery. It was completely full of cars, and so it was a very, very big gathering. And having never been in England, I didn't know about English lanes, so I was driving to the monastery from Heathrow Airport, and we had these little one lane with like hedges on the sides, and I was asking the driver, why don't they just widen it? And, oh no, you can't do that in England. You have to protect those little English lanes. So when a car comes, there's this system where either back up to the kind of next little turnout, and the turnouts are very, very small. They're kind of these little bumps in the side of the hedge, and you either, whoever's closest to the closest turnout either backs up or you kind of pull over as much as you can, and somehow it's a system that works. But there was this very big gathering, so it must have been, I don't really know how it happened that we got all those cars in there through these little English lanes. But anyway, it was this very big gathering, and seeing so many senior monks and also monks I've known from Thailand, and Longpa Liam was there. There was three monks there who were actually senior to Longpa Sumedho. And there's this a lot of Dhamma teachings given. The Saturday and Sunday, May 18th and 19th, there was Dhamma talks given. On Saturday, there was Dhamma talks given throughout the day. And then on Sunday, there was a few more talks, many different reflections, different themes of Dhamma, not just reflections on Longpa Sumedho's life, although a lot of the senior monks who talked they lived and practiced with Longpa Sumedho in the early days at Wat Nongpapong with Ajahn Chah. And so a lot of stories, reflections, recollections of the past, but also Dhamma themes, Noble Eightfold Path, Four Noble Truths. And then after these ceremonies, I got the opportunity to go and spend 5 days at Chithurst. And so it was great to just go there. And then these two very senior monks, Longpor Khun and Longpor Dumrong, also went to Chithurst at that time. So it was nice to be there with them. And yeah, a few other senior monks were there. So there's kind of a big gathering at Chithurst as well. And we had a number of the abbots of the official branch monasteries of Wat Bapong, the western branch monasteries, and there's 15 of those. So there was 15 abbots. We had an abbots meeting that we try to have annually. In the last 4 years, we've had them online. So it was great to meet in person again. So another big gathering at Chithurst, getting to learn a little bit more and experience a little bit more about the history of our Sangha. So, of course, Chithurst was established, was 1978, 77, 70, maybe 78 that it was established, 79. And, of course, Longpo Cha was at Chithurst during one of his visits to the West, during one of his visits to England. So on the Visakha Puja, Buddha's birthday celebrations, then both Longpo Khun and Longpo Damrong, being senior disciples of Ajahn Chah, they gave Dhamma talks. And for both of them, it was very meaningful, very important that Ajahn Chah had actually been there to that location. And they felt very much it's a part of the history of this community. So some very good Dhamma teachings, and just trying to pick up a few threads from the teachings that were given in England. Also, there's this time now concludes a fairly busy time for us, beginning with Longpo Jayasaro's, Ajahn Jayasaro's visit. So he's a British monk, for those who don't know Ajahn Jayasaro, a very senior British monk who lives in Thailand. And he came and visited us, and he was here for, it was April 24th that he came here. So starting with April 24th till about now, it's been a fairly full time, at least for myself, because I traveled with Ajahn Jayasaro up to, after he was here for 5 days, traveled up to Portland with him, and we spent some time at our branch monastery, Pacific Hermitage, with Ajahn Sudanto, and so very full time of teachings, and came back here for a bit, went to England. So one of those threads was noble wealth, reflecting on noble wealth. And there's this teaching of how does a practitioner develop an inner wealth. And it's through virtue, through the cultivation of virtue, long-term, sila, that we develop this very strong sense of inner wealth. And that without that sense of virtue, we don't have a very strong foundation to build our practice on. So we can meditate, we can practice meditation, but if we don't have a strong foundation of virtue, it's like building a house without a foundation. So the house might be usable for a little while, but it's not going to last very long. So being around so many senior monks, senior practitioners, then there's this sense of noble wealth and people who have practiced for a long time. And you have Ajahn Liam, who's been ordained for going on 63 years. And as a very senior, he was the most senior monk there, and the senior disciple of Ajahn Chah, and this really strong sense of, especially with him, this purity of the heart. And when we think about why do we practice, so we talk about things like liberation and nibbana, or ending suffering. Another way to think about it is purifying the heart, or absolute purity. And we do this in developing inner wealth, noble wealth, and many noble qualities. And we use this word noble as well. And we see that that sense of relinquishment, generosity, letting go, these are noble qualities that we can be developing, which lead to a sense of inner strength, inner purity. And Longpo Khun was talking about in his Dhamma talk on Visakha Puja at Chithurst. And he's talking about the Four Noble Truths, Noble Eightfold Path, and that helps us to be able to live together in the way of purity, or live together in the way of harmony. We use this word in Pali, samaki. So when a lot of people come together, we come together in harmony, disperse in harmony, that leads to the continuity of the Buddhist religion, the Buddha Sasana, what we call the Buddha's dispensation. And that comes through things like right action, right speech that are taught about in the Noble Eightfold Path. So particularly right speech, it's something that we practice with in our daily life. We're not just practicing with this on the meditation cushion. And this is something that we say at a place here, like a Bayagiri, we're learning how to interact with each other in the way of harmony, in the way of non-conflict. So right speech is fourfold. We have not lying, which when we recite the precepts, the fourth precept, we say Musa Wada Veramani. It's a refrain from lying. But actually, then in the Noble Eightfold Path, right speech is fourfold. So we say not lying, which is the one of the coarsest forms of wrong speech, but then, or say of right speech, the lying would be one of the coarsest forms of going against right speech. And then we have refraining from harsh speech as well, and refraining from divisive speech, say using speech in order to divide one person or one party from another. You know, malicious, that's also called malicious speech, where we, the definition of that in the teachings that we go to one person, say we want to divide two people from each other. So then we go to one person and say, hey, you know what so-and-so said about you? And then you go to the other person, hey, you know what they said about you? And then we divide in it with the intention to divide them. So that's divisive speech, malicious speech. And then we have idle chatter, which is the fourth aspect of what we call wrong speech, idle chatter. And that's defined as speech which is useless. And this is where we get some onomatopoeia in Pali. So the Pali word for idle chatter is sambapalapa. So it's classed as useless speech. And then this is considered perhaps the least harmful of those four modes of wrong speech. But then it can become harmful if we do it all the time. So it becomes harmful by way of just the sheer volume of it. So Longpo Khun was talking quite a bit about right speech, practicing right speech. And then Longpo Dumrong gave a talk, and he talked about metta, goodwill, having goodwill for each other. And he talked quite a bit about that in the beginning of his talk, actually. And then having this this sense of genuine goodwill is actually quite important. Goodwill for ourselves, goodwill for others, and that very strong goodwill is not that easy to cultivate. So to have a genuine sense of goodwill for ourselves and others is not something that comes easily for most people. But when we do have goodwill, we can have goodwill everywhere. So metta, what is normally translated as loving kindness, that's one of the most common translations. It's in Thai they say wang di, which means just well-wishing or goodwill. So Longpo Dumrong focused quite a bit on metta practice. And we were able to do the circumambulation. They have a small replica of the Ajahn Chah monument in Thailand, what we call Chedi, or the monument that contains Ajahn Chah's bone relics. And it's quite small because of the, legally they couldn't do like a large monument and without getting permits, which would be pretty difficult to get for something like that in England. So it's a very small Chedi. It's about, say, like, just 6 feet high or 7 feet high at the highest point. And so we did, we traditionally on the Buddha's birthday, on Visakha Puja, we do this circumambulation. We hold candles, flowers, and incense, and we quietly walk around three times, either a Buddha image or a Chedi. So in this case, a miniature replica of the Ajahn Chah Chedi. And I think Longpo Khun made the comment to, this is a pretty small Chedi. Why didn't you guys do it bigger? To explain to him about the laws in England that you can't just, in Thailand, you could just build things, at least in the Northeast. So there's a lot of restrictions in England, a lot of, just like those little English lanes, you can't just make the, but I just asked, why don't they just make the road bigger? This doesn't make any sense. It's like, oh no, they pride themselves on not making it bigger. But I guess you kind of have to have that, or else there wouldn't be, it's an island, there wouldn't be any room left if you made everything bigger. So we can't make those English lanes bigger, we can't just make the chedis bigger. It has to be kind of toned down. So this sense of noble wealth, we're having breakfast one day with Ajahn Viradamo, was there with us. He's the abbot of Tisarana Monastery in Canada, same vasas as Longpo Pasano, 50 vasas, same generation. And we're having breakfast one day and just feeling this sense of expansiveness, and he made this comment, we're very rich, we're very rich, aren't we? So as monks, we don't use money, we've given up the use of money, we've given up our assets, but there's this feeling that we're very rich, and we have a strict code of conduct, and we don't really gather up that many material possessions, but we're very rich, we're supported in a very, because we practice contentment. So because we practice patience and contentment, there's this feeling that we're very rich. And it's as if we have a lot of money, but even though we don't actually have money, just this hall that we're sitting in is this sense that, where did this come from? When I first came here in year 5 of Abhayagiri, this wasn't here. So I've been recollecting the past of Abhayagiri a bit, because in a week, Abhayagiri turns 28 in a week. And it's come such a long way. We've got this big community and this big Dhamma hall. This is all fairly new, fairly recent developments. In year 5, we did everything in the, where we had tea time today, we did everything in there. We had all the morning and evening chanting meditation, Dhamma talks, late night vigil, meditation vigils on the lunar observance days. We did that all in what's now the dining hall. And then there was a little house where the bell tower is now. There was a little house, and everything happened in that little house. There was a little kitchen in that little house, and somehow we did these big katinas and these festival days with this little kitchen. And we had, when I first came here, there was 7 people living here, I think. Much smaller community. And then over time, this support happens. We don't do fundraising. That's one of the rules in the Ajahn Chah tradition, is that we don't do fundraising. So we don't go out asking for donations. But it just, the whole Ajahn Chah ethos is, if you practice, the support will come. So you just hunker down, do our practice, and have faith that we'll be supported in that. And if people want us here, they'll support us. If they don't want us here, they won't support us anymore. So everything we see here, and without exception, was that sense of unsolicited support. Of course, over the years, people have taken it upon themselves to go and do fundraising for us, but that wasn't initiated by us. We aren't allowed to initiate that kind of thing. People having that idea to do that for us. So we have now what we have today, built up over time, just based on people coming here, being interested in the practice, the monastic community continuing to practice over time, steadily growing. And then the support comes, and people want to see the community growing and feel inspired by that. And we're rich, with the feeling that we're rich, although not rich in a worldly sense, rich in that we have these good facilities to practice with. We have secluded dwelling places in our beautiful forest. Last year I took a break. I went to break from my abbot's duties. I went to Thailand for 6 months and had a bit of a sabbatical, a bit of a break, and did some solitary practice, did some practice on my own, did some traveling, came back and was walking the trails. I remember the day I got back and was walking the trails and thinking, this is amazing. We have access to this, these this monastery. It's amazing we have access to these facilities and that we can, is this really happening? Do we really own this? Are we really a part of this? So there is that feeling that built up over time, that sense of wealth and inner wealth, and that somehow it seems that when we develop inner wealth, it really goes outside as well. It spills out when we practice things like patience and contentment, and the practice starts to unfold in a way that somehow things gather around us, and then we have these things get looked after in the external world. We have these great facilities, and it's not really from thinking we have to have it this particular way per se, but it just unfolds in this way. So it's kind of like an adventure. Things just unfold in a very natural, very organic way. So going to a place like Chithurst Monastery in England is great to see that, because that was established before Abhayagiri, quite a while before. And really Abhayagiri came out of those communities. So saying, oh yeah, Ajahn Chah came to that place and it was this dilapidated old English mansion, English townhouse, and built in 1862, stone on the outside, and it was an absolute dump when they acquired it. And it had one of our senior monks, Ajahn Vajiro, took a few of us on a tour, a few of us who hadn't been there, and took us into the basement. And he said, oh yeah, this is this place where there was a hole. You could be in the basement and you could see the sky from this point. You could look up through three stories and you could see through the roof and to the sky from this point. It was so rotted out. And so they had to go into the floors and fix up this dry rot. And it was an incredibly massive undertaking of over time. And then they have a forest as well called the Hammer Wood. There's a large pond there, so over 100 acres. It's big forest, actually. I was very, very impressed with this forest. So just fixing up this house and looking after this forest must have been an incredible amount of work over the years. But now it's really great facilities. It's a great place, and they've added more buildings around the old townhouse, and they've had to really make it look the same and tie it all together. So it's just a really great place, great community, and we've had some exchange with monks from here going there. Actually, the abbot of Chithurst is an Abhayagiri monk, Ajahn Ahingsako. So he was just junior to me in the line over the years. We trained together here. When I was at Anagarika, he was here as a layperson. When I was a novice, he was in Anagarika, and so on. Now he's the abbot of Chithurst. So spending some time with him, wow, this is... So abbots are known for... Sometimes there's difficulties having to just deal with the running of the community and so on. But I say, you know, difficulties aside, this is... You kind of scored with this place. This is a nice monastery. He said, scored, huh? That's a interesting way to put it. And I came back yesterday and boarded the plane at Heathrow, 12:20, so just after noon, and then arrived in San Francisco, 3 p.m. It was a 10.5-hour flight, chasing the sun. So I won't go on for too long. Now I'm fading because the time difference. But really thinking, getting back here, this is just a great place to come back to as well. It's interesting to see England, but it is nice to have that sense of spaciousness here. Spaciousness, and there's a bit more blue sky here than England. There was some blue sky. There was some sun there. The sun did come out a few times. But it is nice to come back here, and it's a bit less, I don't know how I'd describe it. It was interesting to be in. It's like cooler and humid at the same time. So with these Dhamma talks, we give reflections and things to think about. So noble wealth, inner wealth coming from virtue. I think for me, that's the overriding sense of this large gathering that just took place, and something worth thinking about in from various different angles. I think I'll leave that for reflection this evening.